Good afternoon, everybody. I have nothing to disclose. I'm an urban planner by training, so I don't know if we have to do disclosure stuff. But anyway, I'm going to start with a story because it's late in the afternoon. I can see everyone kind of, and how I came to be doing this work as an urban planner. I'm from Chicago, and I was away from the city for a long, long time. You're nodding like you. Have you heard me say this?
No, sorry.
You like the story, I do. Okay. And I've been away from the city for many, many years. I grew up on the south side of the city. And one day, I guess this was the late 90s, early 2000s, I decided to ride. I love cities. I like riding around them, looking at them. Can you tell me when I'm using 10 minutes? Because I need to get to my presentation, too. If you just tell me when I'm at 10 minutes. Yeah, okay. So I'm driving down the south side of the city, and I can feel my heart just getting heavier and heavier because these communities didn't look anything like what they looked when I left in the 70s to go away to school. And, you know, Robert Taylor homes and people hanging out in the street and graffiti, and it's just horrible. And these communities were never affluent, but they had a sense of hope and general well-being, even though they were poor, that was missing when I was driving down the streets on this sunny 10:30 in the morning. So I get to a stop sign, and I'm adjacent to Robert Taylor Homes, and I see this movement out of the side of my eye. I turn to see a woman pull her pants down, squat, and urinate on the sidewalk. And at that point, I hadn't worked with mental health professionals. I ended up working at a school of professional psychology for 8 years after that. But my knee-jerk response was, what is wrong with her? What's wrong with that woman? And I looked around, and I saw, you know, these 20-story buildings and graffiti and broken windows and hanging off doors and no grass, no trees. Sidewalks were cracked up. So now, years later, I'm like, okay, so the question is not so much what is wrong with her, but what is wrong with the environment she has to navigate every day that makes her think it's okay to urinate on the sidewalk? Now, I'm sure there's some underlying issues there, but, you know, looking back on that now, that was the beginning of my journey to understanding how the built environment can actually impact how you feel. So that's kind of context for my work. So what is the built environment? So I emailed one of my colleagues in the Department of Urban Studies and Planning and said, what is a formal definition of the built environment? And he wrote back, things that are built. So as it turns out, it's really hard to find a good definition of the built environment, but I found one, and it's basically common sense. So it's product of human-driven processes. It's the stuff that we create, that we modify. And we typically do it, we make these modifications, creations, to make the natural environment more comfortable for us. And to increase, you know, our sense of well-being in the natural environment. And the built form, what we call in urban planning and stuff, is, you know, it shapes the physical and social environment we have to navigate every day. The other thing, which you won't find in the definitions, is it's ubiquitous. It is, hi, Shireen. It is everywhere. You can't get away from it. It's our office buildings, it's our homes, it's, you know, it's playgrounds, it's streetscapes. Unless you go to the bottom of the sea, and there's someone else I know, unless you go to the bottom of the sea or the top of a mountain, you can't get away from built environment. Even if you go into outer space, you're in some kind of built structure, right? So it's everywhere, and because it's everywhere, we forget that it's there. It's kind of like hidden. And we forget that because it's everywhere and it's hidden, it shapes everything. It shapes the whole human experience, including our mental health. And we don't often think about that. And it shapes our health, mental health, in ways that are both direct and indirect. So it directly affects our mental health through our auditory, kind of what we hear, visual, what we smell, our neurological systems are impacted. But then indirectly, the built environment impacts us through its impact on determinants of mental health, like social cohesion and connectedness and sense of community. So a couple other things to note about the built environment, which you won't find in definitions, but this is not new. This idea that the built environment impacts your mental health is not a new concept. So those of you who are psychologists know the field of environmental psychology. But those of us who are in planning and architecture, this goes back decades, centuries. Just think about it. Architects always knew that what you live in, what you have to be in every day, affects how you feel. Do you feel safe? Do you feel comfortable? Are you warm? Are you cold? You know, this is not a new way of thinking, that the built environment impacts your mental health. Do you feel anxious? Do you feel stressed? People spend loads and loads of money and time thinking about where we're going to live because of how we know it's going to make us feel or not. So it's not a new concept linking the built environment to how you feel emotionally. The other thing that you won't read about so much is the built environment is inherently political. Unless you've been involved in zoning and planning discussions, you don't know. This stuff is political. It is not value neutral. It's a reflection of the values of the people who make the decisions about where buildings are located, where roads are located, who has to live near those buildings and roads, whether people live near their work or not. This is all a political process. The built environment is a reflection of values, and this is really important, of the values regarding the living and working conditions merited by different groups of people, right? It's a reflection of political motives and agendas regarding the allocation of scarce resources like housing, employment, healthcare, and green space. Implicit in planning decisions and architecture decisions is who deserves what? Who deserves to live near a park and who doesn't? Who is it okay to put out their housing on a landfill and who is it not okay for? All that stuff is implicit in there. It is not value neutral and it's not accidental that it impacts the health of some people in ways that are really supportive of good health and the health, mental health of others in ways that are really poorly supportive of mental health. So the built environment helps contribute to health inequities and health disparities. So what I'm going to do, and I don't have enough time to go through all of it. As I said, we've known for a while that there's a strong relationship between the built environment and mental health. There's a lot of understanding of associations between the two. Where the science is not there yet is causal relationships. And that's where people like you and mental health professionals and people like me and architects and others really need to start thinking together about how do we establish a clear understanding of the causal relationships between the built environment and aspects of our mental health. So here's one. There's a fair amount of research on housing and mental health. And this is, again, one of those no-brainers. We kind of know it because we all live in houses, and some houses make us feel good, some houses make us not feel so good. But there was a natural experiment in Chicago where all of the public housing was raised, and many of the people in the housing units were moved to private market housing in less distressed communities. And the research is now starting to come in the last 2 years. People who moved displayed lower symptoms of depression and psychological distress, anxiety and mood disorders, panic attacks, et cetera, et cetera. So the research is starting to show that it's starting to move from associations to causal relationships that are being established with respect to housing. A few other things, ambient toxins like lead paint and stuff and lead in dust and soil and things like that may be adjacent to where people live has been associated with brain and neurological damage that leads to emotional, behavioral, and learning problems as well as low IQ. Structurally unsound houses, you know, places that are leaky and drafty, have non-functioning kitchen appliances and bathroom appliances, elevators that smell like urine, poor temperature controls, those kinds of things are associated with high rates of stress, frustration, symptoms of psychological distress, learned helplessness, and lower task persistence. Another interesting study showed that small-scale residential facilities that are quiet and accommodate wandering are associated with improved functioning in individuals with Alzheimer's disease. And I can go on and on. In fact, I have about 32 citations at the end of this, so if anyone wants my presentation, you can read through more stuff. So there's a fair amount of research now moving from association to causation and understanding the relationship between housing and mental health. Oh, my God, okay. So this might be foreign to many of you, public works infrastructure. So public works infrastructure is basically the stuff that makes our society work. All right, so I decided to focus on just four forms of public works infrastructure, and one is transportation systems. And transportation systems are the stuff that helps us and goods and services move from place to place, and they can impact mental health via two pathways, either by impacting mobility and accessibility to services and goods and stuff like that, or through the noise they create. So I don't have time to go through all this, but essentially, let's see, road, air, rail, and rail systems may influence mental health through your access to goods and services and employment opportunities, for instance. There's a whole body of literature on spatial mismatch in planning, where people live in places where they can't get to work and impacts their health and work. Traffic calming things like cul-de-sacs and road bumps can increase a community sense of safety and security by slowing down traffic that kind of moves through the community. On the other hand, poorly thought out transportation systems can harm mental health by blocking accessibility to services and goods, and kind of limiting people's ability to participate in social networks that are really important to their welfare. Noise from airports, roads, and rail facilities are linked to impaired cognition, poor psychomotor and neurobehavioral performance, and adverse emotional stress responses. So again, there's a lot of literature around transportation systems and their impact on mental health and well-being. Energy systems. This is really interesting. I have to say that most of the work being done on this is not being done in this country. It's being done in other parts of the world. And this is an example. We know energy systems, you know, all these different kinds of energy can make our lives really, really comfortable, and they can make us warm in the winter and cool in the summer, allow us to live pretty decent qualities of life. However, when they malfunction, they cause tremendous distress. So just think of Hurricane Sandy in New York and Katrina down here, and when major energy systems failed, what it did to people. Huge stressors. Anxiety, worry, depression. There's some interesting work coming out of the UK. The World Health Organization talked about it and mysteriously was silenced. But it's interesting that there's work suggesting that the electromagnetic fields that emanate from electricity distribution systems are associated with anxiety and depression and lethargy, sleeping problems, and Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease. Fracking, you know, this new way of generating, that causes causing a lot of anxiety and stress in communities where that are threatened by this form of energy generation. I won't spend any more time on that. Communication systems, I'll just say, we love them. They help us stay connected, but they can also induce stress. Just think of the overloaded email box, too much communication. Or there's this whole phenomenon called social severance, in which we don't communicate face-to-face, we just text or email one another. So there's whole bodies of literature of emerging around the effects of communication systems on mental health and well-being. Waste management systems, that's also work that's being done in other parts of the world, and it's interestingly not present here in the United States, but there's some research to show that people living near waste disposal sites have reported a number of psychiatric symptoms, and there's evidence to suggest that people who are exposed to these facilities exhibit greater levels of psychiatric morbidity than those who are not. Again, this work is not being done so much in this country, and I think it's something that we probably need to think about. Toxic waste management systems also cause problems because we know that some of the emissions cause cancer and other physical health issues, and that in turn causes anxiety and stress associated with these systems. And I'm down to 1 minute. Open space, you guys already know. It's nice to be in parks. It makes us feel good. You know, there's this whole body of horticulture therapy where, you know, people get emotional well-being by participating, by growing things. But there's also work showing that kids with ADHD that have parks to play in on a regular basis have lower levels of symptomology compared to kids with ADHD that don't have such places to play. And again, you can look at my reference list if you want to. to a little bit more. Same thing with schools and workplaces. There's a body of literature on lighting and color and layout and open plan and all these physical features of school buildings and open space and impact on cognition, ability to focus, task persistence, a lot of indicators of mental health. So the key points takeaway here is the built environment is not health neutral. It has an impact. It can help or harm mental health. The allocation of the helps and the harms is not random. It's a function of public policy that's driven by political values and agendas and intents that give primacy to the mental health and well-being of some over that of others. That's an important point. Because you think of the built environment as pretty benign. It's not. And then the object of intervention is not necessarily the individual, especially when we're talking about growth and persistent patient level, population level disparities, but the underlying policy context, which is driven by political motivations that shape the built environment that people have to navigate every day. Okay, that's the takeaway. So what does that mean? It means we have to, and we've all heard this before, get rid of the silos. We have to talk one another's language. We have to do research, collaborative research projects. And we need to talk more across the table with one another in policy settings as well. I'll just end with, I'd like to say that in my profession, yeah, these are the references, I would like to think in 1940, when we were thinking about putting people in tall concrete homes, and thinking that was good, that somebody in the mental health profession would have said to us planners, no, not a good idea. But that didn't happen. And we put people in these tall concrete blocks and we paid for it. So the idea is to start talking to one another. We need to know what you guys know. You need to know what we know so we can make better decisions for people. Thank you.